The September 24th, 2019 session of TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR. My name is Dave, KB0S, and the last week I went to the meeting, and that was a big part of what I did. So next on the list, we have Dave, K-E-0-E-A-G. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello, all. This is Dave. KD0EAG made it home safely and like to hear what other people's reflections are after the last week. Take care. Over.
Fine business. Scotty, Dave, N1HAC is in the default room. Could you go get him?
User was moved to your channel.
Oh, got it. Okay, so Dave, N1HAC, go ahead.
Oh, I just connected here. I was over on the default channel. It's the first time I've connected.
It's fine, but I will warn you that if you're on Vox, there usually is a big echo.
Okay, well, I don't have anything to say at this point. It's listening, so I'll figure out how to mute it.
It is easier to set up push to talk, and the way you do that is go tools, options, capture, and under the capture you can define a push to talk key and test it in that space. So I'll just let you know about that. And next is KD8OXT, and is it Catherine, right?
Hey folks, here's Christina, KD8OXT. I just got back from the meeting and am exhausted. And I was also attending with Skylar, KD9JPX, and Rob Weisler, AC8YV, who can't make it tonight. But I'm sitting here also with Nathaniel Vishner, KB1QHX of W8EDU.
Hi.
And the meeting was very enjoyable. So that was pretty much what I've been up to for the past several days.
Very good. It was a good meeting. Next on the list, we have Mike, AAAK, who is a Michigan resident and not too far from Detroit, but was unable to make it to the meeting. And he usually records the TeamSpeak sessions for us and then posts them to the website. Next on the list, we have Scotty, WA2VFI, and I believe you're in St. Louis, aren't you, Scotty?
Yes, I sure am. I made it partway home to my brother's place here in St. Louis, and proceeded today to pack up about 500 pounds of test and radio gear that was donated to me by a retiring ham. Going to haul it all back to Phoenix. So tomorrow's a rest day to rest my back up for the long drive Wednesday when I leave to go back to Phoenix. But the conference was excellent. It was great meeting everyone and seeing some people again and seeing some new people for the first time. Especially where it's really nice to see the students that we managed to get a grant for to come to the DCC. It really made really brought down the average age, shall we, of the graybeards, as Steve would say. So I found a lot of interesting information, a lot of networking, a lot of people that I got to chat with. The only problem was there weren't enough hours in the evening to network with all the people that I saw. So it was like running the gauntlet, trying to get back up upstairs, or the gauntlet or the gantlet, I guess is the proper term, right, Christina? Back over to you. Back over to you, Dave.
Fine business. And one little note from me, I had the impression that I had lost my power supply at the meeting, and when I got home and looked in my room, it was there waiting for me. So I had forgotten to take it with me. So thanks for your help trying to find it.
Okay, no problem. I was worried you're going to run out of computer power. That's a bad thing to happen.
Well, Dave, as Dave knows, when we got back to St. Louis, I stopped by and bought an extra power supply. So now I have two power supplies, which is a good deal.
Yeah, so next time you could leave both of them at home, right?
Or lose both of them.
Yeah, well, you know, for this computer, I carry it to work and I set it up in rooms at home, various rooms. I just went on eBay and I bought 5 power supplies for like $7 a piece, and I just leave them all over.
Well, that's a good idea. I think somebody ought to try to get the franchise to collect the power supplies that people leave in hotels and then sell them on eBay.
Yeah, like I remember when you said you went to the hotel desk and they said, well, we just throw them away. Well, I'll give them my card. They can send them to me. Although I guess I should be local for that to actually have a hope of working.
Yeah, but I hadn't thought about that, but apparently people leave stuff like that behind all the time.
Oh, yes, they do. So I'll ask a question to the, let's see, we've got at least 3 people on here that were at the DCC. Which one of the talks did you think was, that were you most interested in? You want to go down the line, Dave?
Let's see. I'm trying to think about it. I really enjoyed the Satnod's talk on Sunday. I liked the balloon dinner talk, although some of that I heard before. Of the regular presentations, there were a couple that were just full of content, and I liked them, and I'm trying to remember. I don't have the list in front of me to think about. I did like your talk, Scotty, because it presented some stuff I hadn't heard before, and I thought you did a good job of presenting the 2 aspects of the Tangerine SDR, the space weather station part, but then the alternative, which would be a phased receiver for experimental work. I like that. And I did like the talk on FPGAs that the fellow did. I think it was Greg. And I can't remember. I'll let somebody else talk. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I like the whole thing. And it's a tough, would be really tough to go back and sort out a favorite. But there was, I really don't know what whether I could pick one. I'm kind of in that weary, blurred state still, where it all kind of blends together. I did like Scotty's presentation of what we're about, though.
Yeah, I know what you mean about it all blending together. I thought I like Christina's talk about the multi-band receiver and the way they're going to use it. And I liked Jonathan's talk on VLF with the whistlers and the repeat whistlers, and especially since he had audio clips, it was very interesting to hear what those things actually sound like.
I was, I had a question about his talk in that I don't think I ever caught that he said where they come from. What is the kind of belief of the generating process? Did anybody pick that up that I missed? By the silence, I judged no. So, Kristen, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Scotty. I enjoyed yours as well. I too am in the blurred state. One thing that I noticed about it, though, I really liked the format of the lightning talks. The way that whole thing kind of came together was something that I hadn't seen before at one of these single track conferences, and I really enjoyed that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we tried that. Do you remember, Dave? We did it for the first time in Albuquerque, I believe, which was last year, and came up with the idea at a conference they were at, and so we said, well, let's try it, and it was really well received. So now we have 2 sessions of lightning talks, and we have pretty much we get the slots all filled.
I think we even had it at St. Louis, the one before Albuquerque.
Yeah, so we had like 1 session at St. Louis, I think. And then at Albuquerque, we had we may have had only 1 there, too. And I was kind of going to take Steve to task for putting 2 45-minute slots up because I didn't think we'd ever get, you know, like 12 talks. But we sure did, and it was great. And I agree with you, Christine. It's great because it lets us hear stuff that people – really would normally not talk about because they don't really want to take the time to spend preparing a whole 45-minute talk so they can pretty much get up there with almost no prep and they can tell us about something new and interesting.
I remember from St. Louis we had Ward Silver talking about this new emphasis of personal weather stations and things like that.
Yeah, didn't Dave W., didn't you do a lightning talk at St. Louis?
No, I didn't. Not that I remember, but I did enjoy them here.
Scotty, okay, Scotty, both the Daves, the other Dave, yeah, the Dave K. and Dave W. and myself gave regular talks at St. Louis.
Yeah, the one I think I remember was the one where you're talking about tracking birds or something. Is that right? Was that yours, Dave?
I was tracking fish, tracking carp.
Fish, that was it. I knew it was something out in the wild, and it was pretty interesting.
They're still writing papers from that.
Yeah, that was awesome, tagging fish. What a deal, huh?
I want to say I'm glad that Dave, N1HAC, is here. I talked to him quite a bit at Dayton. And welcome to coming along. And you picked a week that we're pretty tired, and about half of our group didn't show up tonight because they're probably traveling home or too tired.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, no, Nathan Daniel said he wasn't going to be there, but I thought Phil would be here. But yeah, I'm sorry I didn't make it out there. It's not on my radar, so to speak, at this point, but I'm very interested in contributing to this project.
So what's your expertise, David?
Microphone activated.
Well, since I didn't even hear the early introductions, I don't know. This is my first time using TeamSpeak, and I'm not sure how you get on the main channel from default channel, but thank you for getting me over here. I work at Dartmouth College. I'm the research engineer. So we do ground-based receivers, rockets, balloons, things like that for auroral and ionospheric research. And I am an electronics designer from a long way back, analog, digital, and everything in between. And so I've been in radio and electronics, and you know, I do everything turnkey if I can, all the way from concept to layout. So anything I can do to help the project, I'm willing to do it.
Okay. It's going to be a FPGA coding. I'm getting a big echo
there.
Yeah, so thanks. A lot of FPGA coding and software is going to be ongoing for years after we get the hardware done. But, to get from the default channel to the Tangerine SDR, just take your mouse up there and drag yourself down to the channel, and that works.
Microphone activated.
Dragging myself, I can do that.
Yeah, I know. Right now I'm pretty good at dragging myself after the conference. I'm kind of just like barely able to do anything. I want to laze around for a day to recover because I got a 20-hour drive ahead of me on Wednesday. So, and after lifting all that heavy stuff, it was even worse than DCC, just carrying the light stuff in, you know. So big 50-pound pieces of test equipment is not my idea. And the stuff came out of a guy's basement. So it was a long haul up the stairs.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, well, very good. I'm finding I'm needing to find new space for equipment.
Yeah, Scotty, I wanted to mention that I met Dave at the Roadkill Picnic at Tom Holmes. And we were down on the lower patio talking quite a bit.
Oh, okay. I probably met you too, David, because I was in and out around there. So, and I was at the Roadkill Road.
Microphone activated.
So what do you think of the Roadkill Road?
Microphone activated.
Oh, well, it's a great gathering. We got to talk shop and nobody cares. Yeah, I was down there with, John Ackerman was there, of course, and I was there with Nicole. She, by the way, has just upgraded to Extra. She was KE8 DHM, but now she's an AC1 HQ. So she's new to the of the hobby, but very interested.
So were you at the long table there by the door, or are you at the round one further over to the left?
Microphone activated.
Yeah, I was in the long table. I can't remember. If you're coming out the door, I was on the table to the left.
Oh, okay. If you're coming out the sliding door, the long table is right by the railing there, the way I remember it. And then there were a couple round tables that were over to the left by the stairs that went up.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, I was over there. I kind of moved around, but yeah. I was probably wearing a cellophane hat.
Gee, I think I would have remembered that.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, that's my other hat in this amateur community. Amateur telescope maker.
Okay. Do you want to try to get PTP working while we've got expert help here?
Microphone activated.
Okay, yeah, this is kind of tedious how they have this set up. How does one do that?
It's tools, options, capture.
Microphone activated.
I do not have options under tools.
It's at the bottom.
Microphone activated.
No, it isn't.
It's possible that Alt-P might activate it.
And he's using a Mac, so the options are different.
Microphone activated.
Yep, I'm using a Mac, so they've got it set up differently. They got to do it that way, I guess. So, yeah, I don't see anything that says options. I've looked at all of these other things over here.
It might be under preferences.
I was going to say, did you Alt-P?
Microphone activated.
When I open the preferences, it covers the main window here, so this is annoying.
Yeah, you're for a screen that says capture, and it should have a whole bunch of options on it. And one of the options is to use PTT or use voice activation.
So, Scotty, I do have to tell you, I'm going to leave at 20:30. My wife wants to watch the Cardinal game in Arizona.
Oh, so St. Louis is playing Arizona?
Yes, and so the Cardinals made it into the playoffs, but they don't know whether it'll be the division or a wild card.
Oh, I'm sure that game's going to be on at this house, too.
Probably. It starts at 2040.
Okay, well, I think unless there's anything else people have, I'll hang around, see if we can get David's PTT working. But any other comments on the DCC or the Tangerine?
I do want to keep in touch with Christina and the people working with her about the magnetometer in any way I can that would, you know, make sure that interfacing is smooth.
Yeah, and I also want to make sure, Christina, that you know anything you need, any help or advice or any questions you got for me on the hardware for your multi-channel receiver, I'm happy to answer questions. I won't butt in and offer unsolicited advice, but if you got questions, I'm happy to help.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm still trying to find my footing with what we've got so far. But I'll definitely have questions pretty soon about some of the other peripheral instruments.
Yeah, because I think, Dave, you're going to be getting some pretty fast progress on the magnetometer, right?
I hope so. Should have. Nothing ever goes as quickly as I like to think, but I think it should. It isn't exactly tough stuff. So I just want to get it checked out and maybe get with you about, you know, starting to lay out a little board around it or something.
Yeah, I do have CAD resources available if we need that, when you need it. And the sooner we can get some prototypes going, I think Nathaniel said he had some people who would be willing to test. And I don't know if that's through CASE or through Scranton or NJIT or where it is, but he indicated that, you know, if we could build a half a dozen units, then they can test them with PIs without any Tangerine stuff at all.
Yeah, that should be entirely possible. There's probably a lot of characterization that needs to be done in the context of these projects that they're better suited to do than I am.
Yeah, and ironically enough, you know, we could have a Raspberry Pi and a magnetometer, and we could probably test a whole bunch of networking software with just that combination without a data engine or RF boards or anything at all else other than those two things. Of course, all you're going to get is magnetometer data, but that's okay because that would be useful.
Quite possible there some other SDR inputs that could be experimented with as well with that combination. Not well suited to this task, but that might be worth looking at.
I have a question for Dave. Did your car start today?
Yes, it did. In fact, I started it two times since we arrived home, and every time some of the mysterious lights on the dashboard went off, and I found the cause of the battery running down. Apparently, my niece and nephew riding in the back seat had turned on some little light back there, single LED in the ceiling that stays on when the power's otherwise off, and that accounts for the state we found it in when we got back to St. Louis.
Just a FYI, when we arrived at the parking lot near the airport in St. Louis, his car had a dead battery.
Whoa, so did you get a jump, or how did you work it?
The lot, you know, I just talked to the people on the lot, and they sent somebody around to jump it, and that was fine, except that every single system, it's not a super complex car, but it's got more anti-lock and collision control and things. I don't know if any of them work, but they sure know how to complain when the battery's been dead. And so the last of the lights went off this afternoon, the check engine light. So I think it's finally originally the steering wouldn't even, it seemed to have lost its calibration on the maximum endpoints of the steering. And so I'd try to turn the steering wheel to get out of the parking spot, and it would just go nuts.
Yeah, welcome to modern electronics in cars, huh?
Progress.
Well, to keep my wife happy, I'm going to say 73 and talk to you next week.
Okay, 73, Dave, and nice seeing you at DCC. Maybe we'll catch you at Hamsai in Scranton, or at least Hamvention.
At least Hamvention. I don't know what it will be in between that. So, but I'll be on there here regularly. So, see you then. Bye.
Okay, 73, Dave.
User disconnected from your channel.
So, David, are you having any luck over there? Sounds like you found PTT, but you don't have the PTT key assigned.
Or the volume set right, perhaps.
Oh, yeah, I think Christina found that problem with the volume somehow.
Microphone activated.
Well, now, yeah, for some reason, I set it to be the space key, and it wouldn't come up.
Okay, try setting it to some key that actually doesn't do anything, like a shift key, like function or control or alt or something like that.
Microphone. Let me give that a try.
I think when you set it to keys that actually do something, like a letter or a function key or a space bar or something, then it gets confused over who has control of that input. So, Christina, didn't you have trouble with the audio being muted even after you got something working?
Yeah, I haven't been able to get push to talk to work. I also tried assigning it to the space key the first time I was using it, and then tried reassigning it to an alt key, but haven't had success. So things that have worked for me are voice activation, which I don't particularly care for because I far prefer push to talk. And you'll notice that I'm muting the microphone in between right now in lieu of having a push to talk key.
Yeah, I know. I don't like Vox either, voice operated, because you know, things you accidentally say or drop, or the dog barking gets through. You see down there in the comments section, Mike uses the right-hand control key. I use the right-hand alt key on this computer. There's an alt key on either side of the space bar, so I use the right-hand one for selecting or for using PTT. It's odd that you can't get used to work, Christina. I mean, you're on Windows. That's like the common OS for this platform. I'm really surprised it doesn't work.
On the TeamSpeak forums, there is a forum dedicated to Mac users. So I haven't found anything that addresses that question yet, but I'm looking.
Yeah, it would seem like if there's a problem with PTT, that'd be a pretty big problem. So it would be noticeable. I mean, there'd be comments on it.
Okay, I've put it on voice activation. I guess that's working.
Yes, yes, that's but now you get feedback on voice peaks from other people talking.
Microphone activated. Yeah, this is bizarre because I use other applications that are far easier to use on this. They're far more functional.
Well, I really have an issue to pick with these guys. I'm making the default voice activation. It did not used to be that way. And it seems like everyone who's come on TeamSpeak in the last 3 weeks has had difficulty. And we get too much feedback, or we can't hear them talking, or there's been some problem that we had to figure out, which makes it really not work very well just right out of the box and first download. It's configured wrong.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, and I've tried several different keys assigning them, and none of them seem to activate properly.
This does seem to be a common problem with Mac users.
Microphone activated.
I feel discriminated against.
Yes, it reminds me of the Mac wars that Jeremy and I used to have. He was a Mac user, and I was a PC user. He started it by making disparaging comments about my PC. So I showed him the ideal use of a Mac, which somebody in Japan had turned it into a beer cooler.
Microphone activated.
Well, I suppose that's one use. Well, the thing I like about a Mac is it works on Windows, too.
Yeah, really. So it's just a matter of what you like. And if we all like the same thing, then there'd be only one kind of computer, but there isn't. So it's fine with me, but it's fun to poke fun at everyone. I thought
I'm activated.
Find a capture screen on the Mac that has all the PTT and voice settings.
What was activated. That?
Did you find the capture screen, the equivalent of the capture screen on the PC that has all the push to talk and different options?
Microphone activated.
Yes, it's in the preferences.
Okay, so there's a couple things that if you click advanced options, and I presume that the window is the same once you find it. If you click advanced options, there's something called voice activation detection while using PTT, and that should be unchecked. And I think Christina had this problem. There were multiple boxes checked, and they have conflicting options or supplemental options. And so if you uncheck that box, it might make it work.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, well, it seemed to be unchecked anyway, but I might try experimenting a little bit more.
Okay, and of the options, I have push to talk, continuous transmission, and voice activation detection radio buttons. And the push to talk is the only one that's activated. And then under advanced options, I have voice activation detection while using push to talk unchecked. And then I check all the echo reduction, echo cancellation, remove background noise. I check all those boxes, but I do not check the automatic voice gain control. And then I have a delay for releasing PTT of 0.3 seconds. I don't think that matters anything. And that's the way mine's set, and it seems to work. Misbehaving programs like this are really my hot button, and I will bang my head against the wall for hours trying to figure it out until you figure out that it's not possible to fix it.
Indeed. Well, I just clicked echo reduction and echo cancellation. Maybe that'll at least cut some of it out.
And the other thing, if you do use voice activation, you might be able to set the level. I think there's on mine, there's like a slider, and you can set the level a little higher, which might keep the feedback from getting you. Or maybe those two boxes you just checked would do the same thing.
Yeah, it does seem to.
Yeah, it seems to work because I don't hear myself anymore.
I found an entry in a kind of a FAQ that may be relevant.
Go ahead.
Okay. It says, question, hotkey not working. And the answer is, this is because OS X's keylogger prevention mechanism is doing the work. Solutions, use shifting keys as a command, alt, control, shift. such as, oh, okay, use shifting keys such as Command, Alt, Control, or Shift. These keys will work under this condition. Or, and not so recommended, System Preferences, Universal Access, check Enable Access for Assistive Devices. The hotkeys will work again, but keyloggers will work too. Did that make any sense to anyone?
Like David's got his threshold set too high for Vox. Oh, okay. That's great, Dave. You put the link down there. So maybe it would make sense to a Mac person, not to me.
I was trying to do a that didn't work.
Yeah, now you're kind of chopping beginning words, which is my whole complaint with Vox. You get it set so that it doesn't interfere, and then it chops words out. And when it when you get the good voice detect, then you get background noise triggering it. So that's why we're here.
Yep, and I've got the Red Sox game muted in the background. Didn't feel that you wanted to listen to that one.
Yeah, I'm surprised that my brother doesn't have the Cardinals game on.
I'm gonna head out here, gentlemen, because it's getting to be just about time for late dinner. So.
Okay, well, thanks for coming back. It was great seeing you at DCC.
Yeah, likewise, and thanks to everyone who put it together. It was a really great time.
All right, we'll definitely look forward to seeing everyone at HAMSAI in 6 months, I guess, 5 months.
I guess the one thing that I have for you guys, and I'll put a link in the chat window here, and let's see if I get it right, whether it's .org or .com, but definitely be on the air for the WWV Centennial this weekend. So put that
in
calendars.
Thanks for that link.
All right. Thanks, everyone. 7-3.
7-3.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, 7-3.
So where are these links coming in? I'm not seeing anything.
User disconnected from your channel. Look at the tabs on the bottom of the screen. There's a left-hand one is the TeamSpeak server. The right-hand one is Tangerine SDR, and they appear in the right-hand one.
I got it. Okay.
And now if you type a message down there below that and hit enter, it'll appear in that particular tab. Or if you go up in the list and click on a particular user, you can open a chat window, a private chat window directly to them that only they see the messages.
I see.
So it'll just generate a new tab that says, you know, Dave WKD0EAG, and then you can chat with him. So.
Yep. Now I actually have a real question about the receiver module. What is the maximum sample rate that one can actually download from it?
Well, we're going to build multiple different receiver modules, and the first one is going to be clocked at 122.88 megahertz. So your the bandwidth of the maximum frequency you can really listen to is going to be half that, 61 megahertz, 61.4 megahertz. However, the data channel between the RF board and the FPGA is much higher speed than that. So you should be able to get build RF boards very much higher data rate than that.
And what's the rate of the data channel to the outside world?
Well, there are 2 gigabit Ethernet ports, and which are actually connected with a switch. So essentially it's 1 gig out that, assuming that there's no traffic on the external switch, external port. And there's also a USB 3.0 device port. So we act like a device, so you can plug it into a PC. And that is full duplex, 5 gigabits per second, one channel, one lane each way.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, because we like to sample at least 20 megahertz, 10 megahertz bandwidth, and I was a little afraid this unit was going to be more like a voice system, but it sounds like, at least for the personal weather, space weather station, we can get some pretty high data rates out of it.
Yeah, and of course it depends on how deep you want the data, but if you have 16-bit data, I believe the maximum you're going to get over of a GigE port is about 20 megahertz bandwidth.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that should be sufficient, and if we need something better, we'll have to build something later. But between the high-speed Ethernet and the high-speed USB, should be able to get some good data through it.
Yeah, and if you're willing to settle for 8-bit data, then you can get 40 megahertz of bandwidth, which is, you know, since we're doing direct sampling at 122 megahertz, you know, there's not much more bandwidth on the wire than that. However, if you look at something like the AEDI-9361, that's like 52 megahertz worth of bandwidth is its maximum. The Lime SDR, I think, is in the 60 megahertz range. And, of course, new chips coming out all the time will have larger and larger bandwidths, we hope. But the ADCs on the Lime are 12 bits, if I remember right. So, really, if you pack the bits, then you can really do 12 bits of I and 12 bits of Q per sample. So really, I think you're going to end up somewhere. I don't think that'll fit on a gig. The whole thing won't fit on a gigabit Ethernet channel, but it might fit on the 5 gig USB 3 if you can actually get that kind of throughput to the other end.
And did I see that there's plans to develop some data compression?
Yeah, they're talking about compressing the data either in the FPGA or on the associated single board computer, because they can't we can't transfer all the data. The argument is that most users don't have gigabit connections to their ISPs, so you're going to have to do some compression, or you're not going to be able to retrieve all the data in real time, certainly. And even if you don't retrieve it in real time, if we have a ring buffer that stores 24 hours of data, that's a whole fat lot of data, so you better have a big pipe to get it. So maybe compression will help you there.
Yes, absolutely. I was hoping to that there would be some good algorithms for that.
Yeah, so Bill from University of Alabama is working on the host software, and he's done some pretty good work on just trying to figure out just how much we can store on the media. And it's interesting that he's figured out that if you were to store 8 simultaneous 192 kilohertz slice receivers, try to store all that to a disk, even if you could get in like a hard drive, a rotating hard drive, even though you could get it, it would fit in the bandwidth, the write bandwidth of the drive. The drives have a finite number of write cycles that they're rated at, and you would burn the drive out in about 3 months.
Yeah, well, we're running into an interesting variant of that. We have actually we're about to deploy a system that's based on the RTL SDR and a Raspberry Pi. And we were wanting continuous data through the night. It's our AM Doppler receiver. I had that at Dayton for display. You might remember that with the little PVC pipe antenna. But we were planning to store our data to flash thumb drives, and we discovered they go up for a powder periodically, and we cannot store continuous data to them. We had to put on a proper solid-state drive, which is set up to be redundant enough to be able to continuously write.
So it's almost like they get the buffers full, and then they throttle, they make you wait until you can write more.
Yeah, something like that. But it was funny because the solid-state drives of the same capacity are about the same price, but they're a completely different interface. Even though they both can go through USB, one is far faster and more functional than the other. So, you know, I'm wondering what you're expecting the storage medium to be on this unit.
Yeah, USB sticks are not going to be it, because I don't think they're going to be reliable enough, and for the very reason you said. And a lot of times the bigger ones will actually be faster, because what they do is they parallel up the chips. And the write operation really isn't what takes the time, it's the erase operation that takes time. And when the sector wears out, what happens is then it can't be erased anymore. So once it can't be erased anymore, because it erases like all ones, so if you can't get all the bits one, then you can't write any kind of pattern into it that you want. And so, of course, then they mark that as a bad sector, and your size goes down.
Right. So, interesting problems. I've been dealing with this since we started sampling audio to hard disks. And interesting, the problem's still there.
Well, so I have a question for you. You say you use RTL dongles, right?
Yes.
So the Tangerine is going to have a USB 2 host port that you could plug an RTL dongle into. So is there anything you can see that, and you know, you might say, well, I could just plug it into the Raspberry Pi and it runs fine. But the Tangerine SDR will allow you to do a lot more high-speed processing on the data from the RTL than you could do in a single board computer like in the Raspberry Pi. Do you see any use for that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But we're getting the Raspberry Pi to do a remarkable amount.
Yeah, and it's just that I can see an FPGA could do an even more remarkable amount. And I don't believe there's any hardware platform that will allow you to do this and send RTL dongle data to an FPGA directly. It could take this directly sampled data right off the RTL.
Yeah, that's interesting. Of course, we're going through the hassle of going through an up converter to get to the RTL because we're actually receiving the AM broadcast band. And being able to do that baseband would be far preferable.
Well, so if you want to do that, on the Tangerine, we have the Leaf board, which is originally was a low-speed I.O. like a Raspberry Pi hat, but we've added some high-speed lanes to another connector. And this has kind of just occurred to me out of the blue that I could make a very low-cost medium-wave receiver because it would need a lot of filtering, but it wouldn't need an expensive ADC and a fancy high-speed clock, and we could make a Leaf board that would plug onto the Tangerine board with very minimal cost that would do the broadcast band no problem.
Yeah, that's certainly of interest, but I will point out that a large amount of our research is up in the HF band as well. We're studying from AKR, the auroral kilometric radiation, which is a few hundred kilohertz up through the AM band. We do auroral roars, which are at 3 megahertz, 5 megahertz, and even we've seen stuff as high as 9 megahertz. So that's why we're looking for things that are very broadband, because we don't know exactly where things are going to appear at any given time.
Okay, so yes, the Personal Space Weather Station module will probably be where you want to start. And did you say Aurorasaurus? Is that your project?
No, that's not our project. Auroral kilometric radiation is one of the things we look for. It's an effect where the magnetosphere kind of rings at hundreds of kilohertz to low megahertz.
Okay, very good. Now that you said that, it seems to me that the question that was asked on here, Dave asked this, what causes the whistlers and all that at VLF? I think it is caused by the sun interacting with the magnetosphere, and that triggers these events.
Actually, whistlers are lightning.
Oh, it's lightning triggers the events?
That's right. Though it's a combination of electron precipitation, electrons that are energized by the solar wind, and then triggered by lightning that's shocking the Earth's magnetic field.
Well, so then it does depend on the solar wind to build up the static, if you will, the charges that get released with lightning?
Yes, it's an interaction between them.
Yeah, we had a great presentation by Jonathan from NJIT. No, he's from the University of Scranton, and about whistlers and the echoes that happen and the trans-equatorial propagation that happens on VLF. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was sorry to miss that. You guys had a lot of fun.
Well, all these presentations are going to be online as soon as we figure out where to put them, and they keep saying they're going to be on the Tapper site. Well, they were all video recorded, so they'll be up on the Ham Radio 2.0 website as soon as Jason gets done doing that. But the presentations themselves will likely be either on the tangerinesdr.com website or the Tapper website somewhere once we figure out where.
Oh, that'll be great. I look forward to seeing them. Some of it is will be new. Some of it is stuff I know, but I like seeing how other people present it.
Yeah, it's video is the second best thing to be in there.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the next HamSci. I wasn't able to make this year, and I'd made the original one at NJIT. But Scranton's not too far from where I am in New Hampshire, so should be able to drive down there this time.
Yeah, no, I told Nathaniel he's got to move it out west the year after because from Phoenix, it's a long drive. So I'll probably fly in. I'm not going to I flew into Cleveland. I'm not going to drive to Scranton. It's bad enough driving to Detroit. The only reason I did that is because I got to stop and visit my brother in St. Louis.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, West Coast is fine with me. All my brothers live out there, so it's a good excuse to go visit.
I told him you ought to have it at the SETI site out there. And I think it's in the Central Valley of California. And they always host conferences, so she should be able to get in there without any problems.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, because they had a SETI conference. It was actually the week before Hamvention, so it was almost impossible to get there if you went to Hamvention.
Oh, interesting. By the way, you were the one who finally I guess it was John Ackerman who finally figured out what was going on with Microsoft and our email system.
Yeah, it was John that figured out that it was our ISP was blocking sending to those domains.
Blacklisted somewhere along the way. Yeah, I guess with a clue, I didn't realize Nathaniel was having problem getting the emails also, and he was also on Microsoft.
Yep, and I think we have, I talked to someone at DCC, I think we have another EDU domain that's being blocked. And I don't remember whether it was RISP, no, I think he discovered RISP was sending them, and RISP was blacklisted by the university servers, so it would just throw the email away.
Yeah, that's what was happening on ours. You know, Dartmouth uses Microsoft Office 365, and I think it actually was a global blacklist that Microsoft holds. And it's so annoying because the email wouldn't even go in the spam folder. It would just disappear.
Yeah, so I told the people who are having trouble, when you sign up on the list, sign up for an acknowledge. That's an option you can get that will acknowledge a separate email to you when the mail is posted to the list. And if you don't get the acknowledgement email, then you know there's a problem because it'll block, the server will block that one too.
Yeah. Well, you had suggested that I send to the list, which I did, and I was able to see it on the in the list archive. And that's when I knew, wait a minute, it's getting to the list, but it's not getting it back to me.
Right. So it's being sent out and the listserv's getting it and dispersing it, but you're not getting it.
Right. Well, I think we've got that straightened out now, and I'm glad I finally figured out how to get on to the telecon here.
Well, very good. Welcome. Glad you could make it.
Yeah, I'd hope to be more of a contributor, but we'll see. See what I can help out with from here on out. Certainly will help out by hopefully buying some and using them.
Well, there's going to be a flurry of hardware activity at the beginning, and then there's going to be software activity and FPGA activity and new boards and all kind of stuff that's going to go on. This is just the very beginning, so I think there'll be definitely a place for you to contribute. It may not be right away other than just critiquing. I like lots of eyes looking at things because everyone sees something different, and if you can get enough eyes looking at things, you can prevent problems. And the earlier you catch the problem, the cheaper it is to fix.
Yeah, I well know that, being a designer myself.
Yep, you certainly would know that if you've been doing it for a while, because it's a kind of a truism.
Yeah, my background is I've actually got a couple of hats in design, but the one I did a lot for a long time was audio synthesizers.
Oh, okay. You have any experience with FPGAs at all?
Yes, I do.
Which ones have you had experience on?
Well, I've worked with Altera and Xilinx. It's been a little while ago, though. I've got some that I'm working on now that are more complex. But, yeah, I've been up on FPGAs ever since they invented them, basically.
Yeah, myself included. I started when I was working at Motorola and built an interrupt controller out of a Xilinx 3010. That tells you how long ago that was. It was almost before, I think it was probably before Altera was even formed. It was in the 1980s. At any rate, there'll be some FPGA work if you're interested. And I always like to get hardware people in on FPGAs because you really need to have some hardware background, I think, to do a good job with FPGAs to not make some mistakes doing it, because it really is different from software.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the one thing that I like, I design by schematic, not by code. So I find myself continually going back and forth because a lot of the source is in code, but I want to see what's the schematic really doing.
Yeah. I used to do schematics too, but I can't really anymore because they're so big. And however, I have used the technique on Altera. You can actually convert the RTL into a schematic, and it will build a schematic based upon how it programmed the FPGA logic cells. So sometimes you have to dig down in and see, well, what is it doing that's not what I think it's doing, to figure out what's wrong.
Yeah, it's kind of like going to the source code or the machine code.
Yeah, it's like kind of like writing C and then going in and looking at the machine code that it generated.
Yeah, I used to do that all the time for real-time systems. But yeah, Altera, I was doing that. I worked on a system that actually was a high-speed data acquisition system, 250 megahertz A to D, and we were trying to develop that for a lightning pulse detector.
I'm going to have to sail on here, so I thought I'd just say 73 to you guys and talk to you next week, perhaps.
Yep, I got to go too here, so 73 Dave, and nice seeing you again at DCC. We'll see you maybe at Hamvention.
Great.
Or yep. With any luck, maybe Hamsci before that.
Yeah, and good try. Talking with you guys.
Okay, yeah, David, nice talking to you too. And we'll say 73's here, and or 73. And
user disconnected from your
next
channel.
Week.
Yep, 73.
And by the way, we will want FPGA help, so you're in the right place.
Sounds good. I hope I can help.
All right, 73. And thanks, Mike, for the recording and posting. We really appreciate it.